Hi, as Peter said, I'm Liz Crane. I'm currently the Director of Partnerships and Special Projects at Art Place America. I want to thank WaterFire for inviting us and for all the great work that you do, and Barnaby and Peter, all of the support and all the things that you guys do. It's amazing. We're forever impressed with WaterFire and Providence. I'm really excited to be here. For those of you who may not be as familiar with Art Place, we're a collaboration of 13 leading national and regional foundations around the country and six of the nation's largest banks. We were formed to help accelerate the creative placemaking movement, thus far we've served primarily as a grant maker in that space. We're entering into our fourth year of grant making. To date, we've awarded over $42 million and 134 grants around the country. As a plug, our next grant application cycle is currently open. So the deadline is December 13th. There's a lot of information on our website, /LOI, artplaceamerica/LOI, if you want more information on that. I'm not going to go too much into sort of what Art Place is and what we do, because I want to talk a little bit more about, I think, the moment that we're in right now. Before I introduce our panel, this is sort of an update on where we are as an initiative and a bit of a sneak peek. So we were formed back in 2011 by this partnership of national and regional foundations who believed essentially that art can play a powerful role in placemaking. Over the last 3 years, we've participated in the growing creative placemaking movement as a large grant maker and as a sort of startup spark to demonstrate that this work is happening, increase the number and funding of projects, inspire new practitioners, begin forming a network and contributing to a common language for the work and thinking about outcomes. We're really excited about how much attention and traction we've seen for this work, not only in the arts world, but actually among placemakers of all types around the country. And I think that aspect of this work is only going to grow, the sort of infiltration that we're going to be able to do into a much wider set of practice. So in the last few months, we've actually been in a bit of a leadership and programmatic transition, taking stock of where we've been and where we're going. And as a self-appointed creative placemaking geek, I'm really excited to tell you that exciting things are happening. I've been joking that I'm sort of walking around everywhere and saying, exciting things are happening. I think when we sort of went through this strategic planning process, we kind of, there's a bit of a hole, I think, in communications coming out. And so we're coming out. Exciting things are happening, everything. In a very short time, we actually expect to make some major announcements about new leadership and new strategies for the initiative. We're a little just slightly short with this event, unfortunately, to actually get into all those things, but that information will be coming out fairly soon. And while I can't reveal any of the specific contents, the general gist is that we're moving from our sort of startup phase into a new phase that will be characterized much more by sort of a greater investment in the field, including and beyond our grant making. So the new director will be the one to actually define that agenda. So I can't offer, again, a lot of concrete constructs for what we're going to be looking at moving forward. But I want to sort of tease out some ideas and some areas of exploration. So what does all this mean in the context of metrics, given that that's the sort of overlying theme of this event? So we spent a lot of time this morning laying out many different ways of looking at this work and thinking about this work. And we think these conversations are really critical. And we're now in a stage with sort of a large enough grant pool at Art Place, where Art Place can begin moving from the sort of theory building and celebration of practice into a more analytical, case-based approach to studying what's actually happening in the places that we're investing. We did release a set of vibrancy indicators, as we called them, last fall. And they're often characterized, I think, as Art Place's evaluation metrics, but I want to be careful about thinking about them that way. They're one way that Art Place has thought about measuring changes in the neighborhoods where we invest. So it's important to note the indicators do not define what vibrancy is. It's not like these 10 things that we've laid out as indicators are what means that a community is vibrant. And they don't intend at all to replace the sort of project-specific outcomes and evaluation tools. Like Jason was saying, you know, it's really important to think about evaluation in the context and the intention of the project. And I'll get into that in a minute. So instead, the vibrancy indicators are really signals that help to indicate that places may be changing over a period of time. They're this sort of triangulation of things that are changing that suggest that other changes may be happening. And they're selected in many ways because of the fact that they're available. And we, as Jason said, we don't want to put the onus of measuring changes for this larger portfolio onto the individual projects. So the idea of having this data come from these data sets is that it's something that we can pull that's nationally available for all communities. However, we know they're not the total picture, and certainly, again, not the most important to projects thinking about impact on the ground. There are a range of instrumental, normative, and intrinsic outcomes related to this work that can be impacted not only in the sort of absolute terms, but as they relate to the many contexts in which this work takes place. So whether we're talking about rural or urban places, central cities or low-income neighborhoods, whether we're talking about changing the future of a disinvested neighborhood, helping a community move past a tipping point, deepening connections and meaning in an otherwise actualized place, you know, this sort of speaks to that question about rural impact earlier today. It is different in different places. So in this sense, I think the context of the work is part of what's going to help define the metrics for measuring the outcomes of the work. And I want to make sure in the next couple of days that we're talking about metrics and we're not using indicators to mean metrics, because indicators and metrics are indicators are a kind of metric, but they're not all metrics. Indicators are sort of a sense of a way, again, to sort of triangulate and proxy data of things that may be changing over time. But what I think is the core to us, at the heart of the Art Place America initiative, is that the environments that we live in play an important role in shaping us as people in society. And arts and culture can play an important role in shaping the meaning of the place and the types and amounts of activities that happen in a place. So for us, the way that Art Place thinks about it, creative placemaking is about the intentionality of sort of saying that we want to do this thing here and something will change in the place that we're working. Indeed, we think arts are uniquely positioned to drive certain types of community connections and investments in place. And I'm not just talking about the sort of monetary investments, although that's a piece of it. And I don't think we want to sort of eschew the economic impact altogether, but also thinking about investments up here and investments in here and the attachments to place. So we've already been informally exploring the different ways of looking at this work. We can separate out projects by tactics. For example, arts incubators, pop-up retail strategies, performances in non-traditional spaces. We can think about projects as far as strategies, like commercial corridor revitalization, enhancement of the connective tissue between nodes of activity, maximization of transportation investments, activation of space. And we can separate projects by intended outcomes, new economic and business opportunities, a stronger civic brand or a shared identity and attachment to place, better functioning or more innovative governance. And then there's always the larger impact, which is, I think, what all of these things are driving towards. And what do we want to see in a place to make it, as a society and as people, to make it more meaning and functional? And how do the arts contribute to that? So what I think, what it's important to realize, I think, for us, what creative placemaking is, this concept that I feel everybody's struggling with, creative placemaking, this new term, umbrella thing that's wrapping its arms around this set of practice, how we're defining it isn't necessarily as important as what it does. So we want to catalyze this creative placemaking movement not around creative placemaking as a thing and sort of a definitional thing, but really around what it is that the arts do and can do. So I know, you know, we're really looking forward to actually working with the rest of the field and figuring out some of these things, and ultimately hoping to leave a legacy of better development strategies and more meaningful invested places for people. There's a lot of work to be done in this new phase. You know, we're looking at all sorts of things from maximizing the potential of current practitioners to broadening the number of practitioners, to creating an enabling environment for this work and really understanding all of the things that happen to make creative placemaking possible, or at least breaking down the barriers of things that are stopping creative placemaking strategies from being as effective as they could be. And just a general understanding of when, why, and how the arts can interact with the physical and the psychological place to enhance its future. So we look forward to being one entity amongst many entities, clearly, that are doing this work and thinking about this work and exploring what's possible. And so I think this new phase, again, sort of from this startup where we've had, you know, we've just been barreling forward in this train, and we've sort of taken a breath, and now it's time to sort of really think about what are all the different sort of angles and possibilities and ways that we can begin working with practitioners, researchers, thinkers, everybody, to make sure that we're creating better places and supporting the arts in doing that. So with all that being said, I think the hard work is always really being done on the ground. As much as we hem and haw and worry about the things we do up here, it's nothing compared to actually doing the change work on the ground. So to that, I've actually brought a couple of our grantees here to share how folks, and specifically I invited two sets of grantees or a few people that are not from the arts world. So I wanted to share how I think people from the place side of the game are employing creative placemaking strategies and working with the arts and artists to change not only the places that they're working in, but the way they even think about doing the work that they do in this sort of place-based game. So the first speaker is going to be Kimberly Driggins from the DC Office of Planning, talking about their Art and Culture Temporiums project, and more broadly how creative placemaking strategies have changed how their office thinks about community planning and engagement. And the second presentation will come from Max McCarthy, who's with the Upham's Corner Main Street, and Lori Lobenstein, who's with the Design Studio for Social Intervention, on everything happening in Upham's Corner, Boston. Following their presentation, I'm going to moderate a quick discussion between the panelists, and then we can take some questions and, you know, to the extent we have time, get into some of these issues. While these folks are talking and presenting on their projects, I do want folks to be thinking about a few specific things that I'm hoping to sort of will become unearthed by what they're going to be talking about. One is we have sort of natural placemakers here, planners, Main Streets, designers. You know, think about how the arts have been uniquely valuable to their agenda as they're talking about their work. I think in what ways are they incorporating arts elements and activities sort of as they are versus really employing the arts as tools and using place as the content for the arts activity that's happening? And then what are the different kinds of outcomes that they're reaching for as placemakers? And then after the panel, hopefully, we'll sort of look back at those questions in relation to what you all have talked about. So with that said, I'm going to have invite Kimberly to come up.
Again, my name is Kimberly Driggins, and I'm the Associate Director for Citywide Planning in the DC Office of Planning. And I'm going to talk about our Art Place grant. But before I do that, I think it's important just to sort of set the context and give you a little bit of background about our office that really will help connect the dots in terms of how we've been able to utilize the Art Place grant and some of our placemaking efforts. So just a little bit about Washington, DC, before I start is, we're a city that's growing. Between 2000 and 2012, we gained over 60,000 residents. That was followed by, there was previous five decades of population decline from 1950 to 2000. So we're in a boom, and much of this growth has taken place over the last 2 years. The city grew from 601,000 residents to 632,000 between 2010 and 2012. That's astronomical growth, and DC hasn't seen this type of growth at this pace since the 1940s. In the office, what I do, one of the main things is economic development strategy, and we've embarked upon several studies that really look at place. I think the one that's most relevant here is a few years ago, we had an idea that we had a burgeoning creative sector in Washington. Washington really isn't known as a creative town, but you know, that's really sort of that's an underground story that's becoming more and more well known. People know things like the Kennedy Center, as well as the Smithsonian, and we have some iconic sort of cultural institutions. But there was also something else that was happening at the local level. And we embarked upon the Creative DC Action Agenda back in 2010. And the Creative DC Action Agenda examined the economic significance of our creative economy, as well as helped define it and outline strategies to strengthen it. The district's creative base includes building arts, design, film and media, communications, performing and visual arts, museum management, and the culinary arts. The DC Creative Action Agenda frames the district in a new light as a top-tier creative class or creative city where creativity and talent combine to enliven neighborhoods, contribute to the overall economic stability, and create an even more distinctive sense of place. The study found that there were more than 75,000 direct jobs in the district's creative sector, and it generates more than $5 billion, that's billion dollars in income each year. These jobs amount to more than 10% of the city's employment base, and many of these jobs are in media, culinary, museum, and design industries. We also found that there were jobs at every economic level. So the city in particular, as we look to strengthen our job base. And so the region as a whole has a really low employment rate. But the city, the district proper, actually has a fairly high unemployment rate. It was hovering around 8 to 10% over the last few years. So one of the key strategies for the mayor was to really help drive that unemployment number down. And we found that the creative arts was a really important sector because it provided livable wages that didn't require a college degree. So the politicians actually kind of took note with this study and really took a keen interest in it. The city office of planning, so in around 2010, really 08, 07, with the economic downturn, we started thinking about how to use our assets and how to think about our assets more intensely and more creatively. We branded this initiative called Temporary Urbanism, and really it's about activating vacant and underutilized space and really thinking about how we can transform land and vacant space to create positive, productive, enlivening uses. Creating a system to address vacancy on a citywide scale, the Temporary Urbanism Program provided us with that opportunity. Some of the benefits to the district and neighborhoods were really sort of street enlivening uses, neighborhood buzz and promotion, new activities, products, art, recreation, and resident and visitor participation. Benefits to property owners included a cultivated consumer interest in their property, maintaining visibility in a location, and engaging community in a positive way. And benefits to temporary users included a venue to launch new products and test ideas before going full force into the market, to highlight and showcase arts and performances, and to really kind of think about innovation. So we branded our temporary urbanism initiative. The first project out the gate was actually a Temporium project. And, you know, it's a temporary emporium. And, you know, it's really sort of our definition for pop-up. And I mentioned our Creative DC Action Agenda, but we also did another study that looked at our retail environment. And even though we're growing, we're severely under-retailed in the district. We lose about $1 billion of retail leakage to the suburbs every year. And a lot of that, a lot of the dearth in retail is actually in our neighborhood nodes and corridors in our underserved markets. So the Temporium Project really sought to activate these ground level retail vacant spaces with interesting things. Our first Temporium happened on 8th Street Northeast. That's a really hot corridor right now. We did our first project with about a $20,000 grant. It was a local funds. And we started with our own space. We had a very difficult time trying to get private property owners to basically donate their space for free. So we started with our own project. So what you're looking at there is this library kiosk that's about 1,500 square feet that was decommissioned. So the program ran for 4 weekends. In July and August of 2010, it had approximately 1,800 visitors. And it included, this had a fashion focus, and we used 20 local designers, and we had over $20,000 in sales in the 4 weekends. And again, it was just weekends, so Thursday through Sunday. And most of the customers were in D.C. So that was our first foray, and that helped us kind of think bigger about what we could do. So when the Art Place grant initiated in 2011, we thought about the Temporium idea, but instead of having it be a focus on retail, we really thought about arts and culture, and we went after the Art Place grant. We received a $250,000 grant to do 4 arts and culture temporiums in emerging creative neighborhoods. We would transform vacant and underutilized storefronts and empty lots into artist showcases for 3 to 6 months. We worked in 4 neighborhoods. The neighborhoods were really diverse and sort of across the city. The 4 neighborhoods included Anacostia, which is in Ward 8 in the eastern part of the city. We also worked in Brookland, which is Ward 5. We also worked in Deanwood, which is Ward 7. And we also worked on Upper 14th Street, which was Wards 1 and 4. The geography crossed two wards. I'm only going to talk about 2 in the interest of time. The Luminate Anacostia project was our first one. These 4 arts and culture temporiums ran, some of them concurrently, for 3 to 6 months in the summer of 2012. So from April to October, the 4 projects were going on simultaneously for the most part. Luminate Anacostia was really the brainchild of our office, the DC Arts and Humanities Commission, which was a strong partner, and I'll mention them over and over again because they bring the arts programming and the arts expertise in terms of doing curating the art. And we also always looked for a local partner on the ground in the neighborhoods. In this case, it was Arts Development Corporation. Arts Development is a 501c3 nonprofit whose sole focus is looking at arts and culture to drive neighborhood revitalization. So it was a slam dunk for us to work with Arch Development, and they had been doing some really interesting things in the neighborhood of Anacostia. And Anacostia, for folks who are not familiar with the district, it's an area that's not often in the news for positive things. And this project really helped change the narrative and the public's viewpoint of what Anacostia is and what it could be. It also helped accelerate the creative placemaking that was intrinsically taking place in the neighborhood. There were a number of galleries opening up. Arch Corporation was managing a number of those galleries, but this grant allowed us to kind of ramp up the programming and kind of go a little bit larger to scale with some of the things that we were looking to do. The title Luminate is based on the definition of illumination. It's loosely based on the all-night arts festival Nuit Blanche, or White Nights, in such cities as Paris and Toronto. The 8 represents the location of where the event was held. Local and international artists and arts organizations participated in the historic event. This, what you're looking at right in front of you, is the old police evidence warehouse. And we took over that space. It's about 220 square feet. empty space that was transformed, and I'll show you some images. We also occupied about a half a dozen spaces along MLK Road and Good Hope Road. So the issue in Anacostia and what we were trying to solve for was to activate the vacant space along the business strip and to also increase activity after work and in the weekends. So that's what the project was hoping to do. Here are some images of the light box, which was the former police evidence warehouse. We turned it into the light box. We had a curator. In addition to the arts and humanities, we partnered with some other local organizations that brought really strong programming, as well as events programming, to the space. Our partner, Arts and Humanities, had a concurrent project going on called 5x5 Public Art Project. It was the first time in the city that they were going with, it basically was 25 public art installations, and we were able to get 2 to 3 in Anacostia and really sort of really upped the art ambition of the Luminate Festival. What you're looking at here is sort of what it looked like at night. We were able to kind of light up the sky and the neighborhood for the weekend, the opening weekend and the closing weekend. And you're seeing sort of where Arch does its work in a gallery, Gallery O, right there. I want to talk a little bit about the impacts of the Luminate Festival, because they were very big. And we had some naysayers, that didn't think that this festival was going to really make a difference. And these were local people that are like, the Office of Planning should be focused on sort of affordable housing and, the typical stuff in which we do. But this festival, we thought, was really important to kind of help change the narrative of what the neighborhood could be. And we really thought that making this investment would help residents feel better about where they lived and also attract additional visitors to the area that had never really given Anacostia thought. So on the opening night, we had great promotion and buzz. Between 3,500 and 5,000 people attended on opening night. A lot of them took Metro and walked from the subway. We had great signage, and there were programs, and we had people out in full force to kind of let folks know what was happening. Anacostia's restaurants had their highest grossing single night ever on the opening night of Luminate. We provided over $25,000 in grants to DC-based artists, 66% of whom were East of the River, which was Ward 7 and 8, where the event was taking place. We accomplished the goal of keeping Anacostia active on the weekends and during the business hours. And we also had some big things happen after that event. The 8th Street Playhouse, which was looking for space as a result of participating in Luminate, decided to move over to Anacostia. It's now called the Anacostia Playhouse, and it's actually right next to that old police evidence warehouse. There was another one. They're currently occupying that space. A year later, the deal was done, and they're open for business. In addition, about 3 to 4 of the vacant spaces that we used last year were leased up. So we did Luminate Anacostia again this year without Art Place funding, but Arch Development Corporation believed so strongly in the project that they found funds to keep it going. And hopefully it's an annual event for the community. And a lot of the community residents that were a little bit skeptical at first really sort of got on board, participated in a lot of the projects and the events happening over the 3 months, and are some of the biggest proponents. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about another project, the Central 14th Street plan. This was an active planning neighborhood plan that was going on in our office. We used the Art Place grant to actually start plan implementation. Our office typically doesn't do implementation, and we've been looking to try to make our plans be more relevant and more meaningful. And we had an opportunity with Art Place to kind of jumpstart the implementation with an ongoing active plan, planning process. The small area plan or neighborhood plan priorities are enliven retail to encourage patrons, create active, walkable, safe streets, increase connectivity between commercial nodes as well as east-west multimodal transportation options, and ensure more green areas for public space. In this project, we partnered with Arts and Humanities Commission again, And we also went national with the Rebar Group. The Rebar Group is based out of San Francisco. They're doing a lot with art, design, and the intersection of the two. And they were really interested in doing a project in Washington. We chatted with them. We talked about the neighborhoods. And this one really sort of emerged as a project where we could kind of test ideas in the plan and build support for the active planning process before it got to council. So briefly, what Rebar did, and we also had a local partner, I should mention them. They were a nascent merchant association that had newly formed, and so they were sort of looking to make a mark themselves. And we never go into neighborhoods where we don't have a strong local partner or a partner that can help us on the ground in terms of buy-in with community support. In this instance, it was the Uptown Business Association, and it included a lot of the merchants that were participating in this design intervention. So really briefly, we did three or four catalytic events with Rebar. The first one really looked at reimagining Colorado Avenue as a public plaza. So we actually closed off the street for the day, and we looked at what the plan said, which was the Colorado Triangle area has the potential to be a unique arts cluster with a sense of place in the public realm. The design intervention here was the mock-up, where we actually did some painting of the plaza. We had some temporary seating. We did some landscape improvements to the area. And I have to say, as from a planning perspective, when you actually are doing projects on the ground, you invite a totally different group of people to your process. And we were able to attract people just by them walking by saying, hey, you know, what's going on this Saturday? You close off the street, you know, get a paintbrush, you know, start helping out. And we talked about the plan, but that wasn't the main goal. The main goal was sort of to build community and help residents understand what was happening. And through the course of that, we had boards of the plan, you know, get people interested in sort of the larger planning process. So this Art Place project actually helped broaden the coalition for the plan, because it was people who were interested in actually doing and not necessarily just thinking about or brainstorming about a plan in the abstract, but they were seeing something tangible about what we meant by public infrastructure investments and what it could look like. With that, so the design intervention here was temporary street furniture, and the temporary street furniture, what is the art. So the art being created was this. We did a design charrette the same day we did that Colorado Plaza mock-up. A little bit later in the afternoon, we used a local artist's loft space that lived in the neighborhood to hold the design charrette. The design charrette was really different in the sense that it was roll up your sleeves and make stuff. It wasn't like whiteboards and what do you think. It was actually tell us, show us what you want to see. So it was really cool. I mean, from a planner's perspective, I had actually never been to a design charrette quite like that before, and it was really, really interesting. And what we heard loud and clear is that some of the issues there were with loitering. So the furniture that was created wasn't anything that was permanent that was installed in the sidewalks, but it was actually stuff that you could take in and out. And so we ended up creating approximately 30 pieces of temporary furniture that could be used and seen by various storefronts in and along the public realm throughout the corridor. The furniture could be easily moved and shared amongst the businesses. We decided on temporary, on the street furniture because of the depth of the sidewalks, and we also wanted to drive visibility of the local businesses, and we thought that the street furniture was a good way to kind of pique residents and passerby's interest to actually the storefronts that we were trying to increase the foot traffic. So that was the design build workshop happened later, design build workshop and installation. So the pieces were prefabricated, but we actually took it to the street. We didn't actually, what you see here is the furniture being painted and made right there on the street. We took a week in July and we had a storefront space just for materials, but we rented it out. An empty storefront, people didn't realize, you know, what it was. And we actually created this stuff out on the public realm, and it generated a lot of interest and buzz about the project and the process. So again, the visibility factor, the cool factor was pretty high. The last event that I'm going to talk about is, you know, we ended it. So this project started in April and ended in August, September. And between the three events that Rebar led, we had the local organization do programming as well every week with arts, mainly jazz concert series, some spoken word, what have you, after the furniture was created. It culminated into this open kitchen culture crawl, which basically the issue here was repositioning this corridor to benefit from Columbia Heights, which was it's a neighborhood that has a lot of recognition. It's a place that people like to go. It's a destination neighborhood. Right above it, though, was suffering. And there were a lot of unique and individual businesses there, a lot of ethnic restaurants there, but nobody was really patronizing it. So the furniture, as well as this open kitchen culture crawl, was meant to highlight the diversity of those businesses. And it's basically like a food and art and culture crawl. And what you see here, we worked with local artists to do this mural, which is right next to one of the businesses. You can see the furniture being utilized, and we moved along the corridor. It was in the span of maybe 8 blocks. And it was an outdoor kind of food party festival. And it really was unique, and we had different types of artists participating, and it was really successful in highlighting the businesses. The businesses did really well, and they got a lot of recognition and visibility that they hadn't previously had. So I want to wrap up with just some themes or takeaways from our project. And really, we don't, with our creative placemaking, because our grants have been relatively small, we really think about impact. So everything is within the context of a planning process, whether it was the Creative DC Action Agenda that actually highlighted some neighborhoods that were ripe for creative placemaking, the small area plans that also spoke to the need for arts and cultural uses. We hit the ground running with some work that our office had already undertaken. And with a temporary project, that was really important because we had a short amount of time to kind of get these projects off the ground. So we weren't necessarily kind of just dropping in on the neighborhood and forcing something on the neighborhood. That wasn't the case at all. These were things that had been called out, that had been identified. The neighborhoods welcomed us because it wasn't just talk, oh, you said this in a plan 2 years ago, but we were actually coming to them with a tangible event or product. And we partnered with strong local partners that kind of helped promote and market the events. So that was really key to our success in the neighborhoods. In addition to partnering locally, the Office of Planning, we're not art curators. That's not my background. I don't want to be an expert in that, but I knew who to turn to kind of bring the ambition, the high artistic value and kind of creativity for the neighborhood. So partnering with strong arts organizations was key. And we were a relatively new player in the arts community in DC. And, one of the lasting effects is now they look at creative placemaking a little bit differently, and they actually come and kind of talk to us about projects before they even start to implement them to make sure that, it's going to resonate, to make sure that there's some basis for doing what they want to do. So that was a key connection that was made and a bridge, the intersection of the arts community, which is vast in DC, as well as our focus on place and what might work there and what might not. I'm going to end there by just saying that we received a second Art Place grant. It's totally different from the first one. It's going to come online late next year, and it's around creative play space. And this time, we thought about where we had play deserts, where we were underserved regarding playgrounds, and also not just playgrounds for kids, but for adults. So this second round of Art Place funding is really looking at, it's for an innovative urban play space competition. It's a design competition to develop 3 to 5 urban play spaces where we have a dearth. And I can talk about that if you're interested after the presentation, but I want to turn it over to my colleagues to talk about their project in Boston. Thank you.
So, as Liz says, my name is Max McCarthy. I'm the executive director of Upham's Corner Main Street. This is Lori, program design lead at Design Studio for Social Intervention. We're two partners in a kind of a cross-sector initiative involving arts organizations, non-arts organizations, community-based organizations, business development organizations, around supporting cultural economic development in the neighborhood of Upham's Corner. And predominantly, which we'll talk about today, by really using creative ways of engaging folks from the neighborhood. So our roles as organizations and some of the other roles of the partners will sort of come out as we talk about our project here. But I wanted to start first by giving a little context for Upham's Corner, the neighborhood of Upham's Corner. So this picture is actually the storefront of my office. I have a storefront retail location office right in Upham's Corner. Upham's Corner is a retail district. It's got about 140, 150 businesses, and in the neighborhood of Dorchester in Boston, for those who are familiar, actually really adjacent to the next mayor that's coming in January. It's got a big historic connection. So a couple of fun facts. Upham's Corner actually has the first supermarket ever in the nation was in Upham's Corner. It has one of the oldest cemeteries in the world, in the nation, in Upham's Corner. So it's got a big historic context. There's a lot of underutilized architecture and physical assets that we'll talk a little bit about later. Now it's actually an incredibly diverse neighborhood. It's actually got one of the largest Cape Verdean populations in the country. It has a large Latino population, large African American population. So it's incredibly diverse. It's also incredibly young, so it's got a really high population of folks under 18. So within that context, within this kind of this historic connection, a diversity in the neighborhood, a really young population, and the kind of the diversity of the partners that are bringing things to the table, it was sort of setting the scene for a creative placemaking intervention. So a couple key threads that links all this, a couple key values. I know I heard the conversation about values, spoken a lot today. One of the things that we really value in a lot of this is having local residents, local artists, and local businesses at the forefront of everything we're doing. So creating opportunities for folks to engage, to collaborate, to learn, to participate, even lead a lot of the pop-up interventions, activities, and events that we're doing. We really think that really helps sustainability, and aside from resources, really getting that community foundation is really important. The initiative is basically run by community organizers, so that's really important to us. The other thing is about being very intentional with the folks we're reaching out to. So artists, young people, folks who are often left out in neighborhood initiatives such as these. Young people, artists, businesses, folks who don't speak English as their first language, being really intentional around on reaching those folks who are often left out in kind of community initiatives like this. So this hub is a nice way, and we'll talk about some examples of how it's been used around folks to get information, learn, interact, engage, and Lori's going to talk some examples around how that's looked like. So
we kicked it off with a public kitchen, and at the design studio, we believe that the public is still a work in progress, right? And that's part of what creative placemaking is about. How do we imagine more affordable, more convivial spaces? And we thought, if we want to bring the community into this creative placemaking project, let's break bread together. So the public kitchen was imagining a new public infrastructure, like a public library, but what if there was such a thing? And having a partnership, some of the partnerships that came out of Art Place, like Upham's Corner Main Street, we had that office as our space, and 500 residents came through, walking by, foot traffic, came in, sat down with us, sat down with each other. And I think when we knew we had succeeded, when a woman about my age convinced her mother that it really was okay to share her secret recipe that she had written and then thought about and then balled up and thrown away so that she wasn't just sharing it with us or with Upham's Corner Main Street. It was on the wall in our sharing recipe section, right? Because she was sharing it with her community. So we had the chef from the homeless shelter across the street come over and make sure we were using gloves and we were serving healthy, safe food. So we just had all kinds of things going on in the neighborhood. We had this young guy win our chef competition. We had worked on at the Dudley Greenhouse just down the street. So again, just a way of kicking it all off and really bringing the neighborhood together to start to think about what is this thing, creative placemaking.
So a couple of some of the goals here going out real quick. I sort of mentioned the first two. Part of what I brought in for those familiar with Main Streets, Main Streets is a non-arts organization by any means. We support businesses and business districts. And so I'm sort of brought in to think about what are the economic development aspects and the strengths of this initiative. So I'll talk a little bit about how we use cultural events and activities to support artists and businesses in the neighborhood. One quick thing I wanted to mention here is that you know, rooted in having resident leadership and business ownership is the idea around, you know, arts is often synonymous or can be synonymous with the idea of gentrification and using arts to sometimes flip a neighborhood. So we want to make sure that community stakeholders, the folks that would be directly impacted by changes in a neighborhood, have a seat at the table. And so we just want to be intentional and make sure we're aware of that as we're doing this work. Real quickly, one of the first forays we've looked at, we actually have a theater in our neighborhood. It's a 1,400-seat theater that attracts both kind of community-based events and events from Metro Boston. And we've really thought about how do we leverage audiences that are coming in for the local businesses. So sort of our collaborations on that have sort of ramped up throughout the Art Place grant, but things like dining guides, events where we actually brought businesses to the lobby and through Boston Ballet, where we actually had fashion businesses showcasing, promoting their work as audiences came in. We actually did a study with the Strand around looking at what its impact on local restaurants, and some businesses get double the amount of sales on an evening night, because sometimes around 6 or 7, there's nothing else happening in the neighborhood. It shuts down because of crime and other issues in the neighborhood. The other thing that's been a really interesting thing for me, a paradigm shift for the work that we do to support local businesses, is thinking about artists as businesses, right? So, you know, when we typically think about businesses, we're always thinking about brick and mortar businesses, businesses that have a storefront office. But there's a lot of kind of informal economy and folks who have businesses at home who are part of the neighborhood as well. And so we're working with a partner organization that specifically works, does technical assistance for cultural entrepreneurs. And that's been a really big paradigm shift for me and my organization, thinking about supporting artists who are part of the neighborhood but don't necessarily have a storefront office. So this is an example of one of the events we did. We had a street festival, which merchants from the neighborhood have been clamoring for. We used to do it in the 90s and 2000s. It wasn't able to be, we weren't able to do it just because it got so big and so overwhelming. And we closed down the street, had local artists, local vendors, local performers all come together and perform on a great Saturday afternoon. We actually worked with a team that analyzed the economic impact, and we found that it created over $13,000 in increased economic activity, both from people buying from local vendors as well as the spillover effects of people buying things around from different businesses in the neighborhood. So for some of these people, this could be double the amount of sales they get in a day. So this is a giant one-off event we do annually. We're currently piloting kind of a more regular version, like an open-air market type of thing, where folks can sell things on a regular basis. So I think that's basically it. Move on.
One of the things that we felt was really important in terms of engaging the community and thinking about their neighborhood and the arts and culture in their neighborhood was really bringing planning processes and conversations about the neighborhood out onto the street. A lot of times when, no offense to Kimberly, a lot of times planners will hold a neighborhood meeting and they'll get like 20 people and they'll be like, check, neighborhood meeting, hell. When we turn to artists to think about how do we creatively engage people in this conversation, we took art into the neighborhood in ways that made planning accessible and gave easy ways to weigh in. And by that, we got literally hundreds of people weighing in. For example, there's a $3 million Department of Transportation plan for Upham's Corner, including a fence down the middle of the road. So this artist, Cedric Douglas, who's a local artist, worked with us and created some signage and different ways to engage the community in thinking about that plan. And what would you do with $3 million? So we were able to both spread the word about the plan and indeed stop the fence going down the middle of the road. That plan was stopped. But also to capture data about what would people do with that money. And anytime we capture data like that, when we think about impact and desire, we want to make sure that we're sharing it not just with funders and not just with planners, but also back to the community. So we always make sure that those things are public conversations, or if they're conversations people are having with us, that we make those answers public. Having the hub, having Upham's Corner Main Street as a way to engage people on the street. Again, both through public kitchen, where we are cooking with people, talking with people, and through making planning processes public. Again, using some creative artistic approaches as well as having installations literally out on the street meant that people could really access planning, no matter if they came back with their 14 books about the history of planning in Upham's Corner, which did happen, or they were 10 years old and they're weighing in on what creative thing they wanted in that large building that isn't being used. Coming out of making planning processes public and hearing what people wanted for the neighborhood, we decided to do Street Lab Upham's, which was taking a tactical urbanism approach to really engaging residents and merchants and local artists in transforming small public spaces around Upham's Corner. So this was one of the spaces that we transformed. The alley in the top left, that's how it looked. We gave, the first day we were out, we had photos of a lot of spaces around Upham's Corner. What did people want? And people wanted to make that alley, again, To the merchants nearby, it was nasty. It smelled of urine. To the pedestrians, they could no longer get to their neighborhood from Upham's Corner because it was a scary, smelly alley. We had a magnet board where people could say, this is what I want. I love that, the colors on the steps, or we need lights, or we need merchants here. And from that, we ended up over a course of six Saturdays creating a mural on the steps. We have some beautiful knitwork that some knitters and local folks learning to knit created as a railing. A local artist got to show their work in the alley gallery. So again, we've heard about it a lot today, but that idea of temporary installations and temporary art to point to what's possible and to be in a conversation with people about what they want. Having the neighbors and merchants make that happen meant that even once this is gone, they might say, you know what, I remember that bench, I want to build a bench, or I want to hook up this other alley that they didn't get to. I'm going to hook up with somebody and make that happen.
And part of these sort of these temporary installations are also about, as I mentioned earlier, using creative ways of engaging people, right? So, your typical way is like have a meeting, people come to a meeting and then they sort of give their opinions. But this is actually kind of a feedback loop to get. We had a regular advisory committee of residents, merchants, artists that came together and looked at kind of the higher level planning of arts and culture in the neighborhood. And these were creative ways of touching those folks, the street fair, these installations. So again, it's sort of a feedback loop. And, how are you creatively looking at engaging people? So
we can hand that right back.
Okay.
Sorry, we zipped through it a little bit. We're a little behind. But.
I was going to sort of have a discussion among the panelists and then take some questions. I'm going to head that off a little bit and try to consolidate what we're going to do. So for one thing that I kind of want to point out that was being discussed by these folks is the kinds of everything that we're talking about metrics and what kinds of things, are metrics for places changing. I think, a lot of the stuff that they were just talking about as people invested in place and as trying to change places, like whether it's the retail, whether it's the activity, whether it's, these sort of physical things, the street furniture, those kinds of things are all potential sort of, ways to measure impact. I do want to make a quick note because both of these projects are sort of very, there's similarities, but it's, they're very, based out of this certain types of models. This is not all that creative placemaking is. It doesn't have to sort of have this approach. There's a whole wide range of strategies. But again, I wanted to bring these strategies because I felt like we were going to talk a lot about other arts-based creative placemaking strategies. So this is really, interesting to hear the sort of, when these folks started these projects, what were they trying to achieve? They're trying to achieve certain things within the context of the neighborhood around activation and merchants and things like that. And I think one of my favorite quotes, I did a site visit with Upham's Corner about a month ago, and you guys may remember that one of my favorite parts was this businesswoman who's been in Upham's Corner for 30 years, 40 or 50 years. She's a resident, and she owns a building, and she owns a business in Upham's
insurance
Corner.
Insurance broker.
And she's an insurance broker. Yeah. Okay, so not like an artist. and she came out to talk to us, and she was like, the air has changed. Things are changing. She was going to leave, right? And because there's been this sort of injection of vitality and action and the things that this sort of arts-based programming has brought to the picture, she's really excited to stay where she is and explore what's possible in Upham's Corner. I want to go back to those questions I asked before the presentations. One, sort of, what are some of the things that the arts bring uniquely to these kinds of strategies? I think the ability to bring people together, the ability to envision what's possible, and sort of the ability to change the configuration and the meaning of a space, and giving people the opportunity to experience what it means to change public space, which I think is often feels to many people like a static thing that they have no control over. So what happens letting people get their hands dirty with these things, both in temporary and permanent ways, I think is really interesting. I think both of the programs involve both the arts as they happen. I think one element of Upham's Corner that we didn't get into is the role of the Strand Theater, which is this sort of central old theater in the middle of Upham's Corner that, there's a whole new wave of programming and activity happening in the theater that's sort of providing this synergy between what's happening outside of the theater and then all of the new activities of what's going on inside of the theater. And so it's both a combination of sort of using the arts as a tool, but also planning activity and sort of newness around the arts that are already happening. And then I think, you know, what are different kinds of outcomes and impacts? You know, there again, there's this sort of psychological, the hope. I love that question. You know, how do you measure hope? You give people something to be hopeful about. And then, you know, I think that that's a really important piece of this work. And then just the growing sense of cohesion and connection around a place this is literally placemaking.
Just to tell a quick story extended with the business owner. So, you know, we were talking about, speaking of evaluation and metrics, we were talking about the sort of the economic impact. You know, she's like me, I think in numbers, always like, oh, look, Linda, like, look at all these numbers we got from all this, the economic impact of these special events. And she's like, yeah, that's great. But, you know, and she said this to me, and I use it now. But she said, it's not just about the money, but it's also about how rooted you feel to a place. And she said, you know, you're particularly when there's turnover with businesses, how people feel connected to a place is just as important as the money. And I was like, wow, that was really deep, and I never thought about it that way. And so, you know, that was an insurance broker who really has no arts background whatsoever. So I just wanted, we're always talking about how it's hard to quantify these things, and I always think about mentalities and the conversations I have with businesses and merchants who've been there for years and are finally now starting to reinvest in their building and things like that. So just want to add that.
I was going to say, too, we were having a lot of interviews on the street when people would come over to StreetLab Uplands and talking to them about vibrancy in some ways, maybe some words that made more sense, or asking them what words made sense to them, kind of what are their hopes and fears for Uplands and where do they feel like they belong. And again, you know, I think we're learning from them what the narrative is and also thinking about how do we change the narrative without changing the population. Right. So our next step on that is to capture those one-on-one conversations, which were tremendously positive. People really proud about the diversity of Uplands as well as sad about the reputation of Uplands. And to say, taking, again, Max's storefront and then some of the other businesses we built relationships with and say, let's put those quotes up on the windows so that people are having conversations with each other. And so that narrative is changing organically around the street from responses to those conversations.
So the question, I'm going to wrap a few of the questions that I wanted to ask sort of in together in one. What is different about the work that you're doing because you've added an artistic lens? And what did the Art Place grant, and not necessarily just because it was an Art Place grant, but what did sort of taking this framework of the artistic driver of sort of placemaking, how did that change, or what would have happened, or what do you think would have happened without that framework? You know, what is this added to the work that you're doing? And I don't know if either one of you wants to start.
I'll start. So with us, with Office of Planning, it really did help us jumpstart plan implementation. And again, typically we don't have money in our budget for plan implementation. And the Art Place grant, you know, they were small catalytic investments that really actually helped build a broader coalition for the planning process. And with the Central 14th Street example, that was an active planning process. And so by the time we got to council, we had broader, much more support than we would have had we not done the intervention. I didn't mention, but in all of the projects, the council members came out, supported the plan. I mean, this was, and we did a lot of marketing and promotion and also kind of talking about the advantages. So it really gave us a way to kind of move faster what we were trying to do and to kind of show what was possible in a very sort of tangible way with our placemaking efforts. And in each of the neighborhoods, the other three didn't have an active planning engagement, but they did have strong neighborhood groups that were interested in moving forward in this type of dialogue. So, you know, it was tremendously impactful and helpful for us.
So just a quick follow-up question, then I'm gonna let you guys go. So would you say that the arts piece of it, specifically the arts aspect of the work, was showing people what's possible in that tangible way?
Absolutely.
Okay, just wanted to pull
absolutely.
That out. Yeah.
So I'd say the Art Place grant catalyzed relationships and brought down barriers between organizations that typically don't work together. So, you know, I had to repeat, I'm not an arts organization at all. You know, we we've thought about using the arts to look at neighborhood revitalization. And so that's led us to form some partnerships and relationships with other organizations that can help us do that. So I think that's what really helped. And those relationships and that thinking will really sustain. The other thing I think it's been really cool for me is, I was telling some people here earlier, is that thinking about arts, I guess, not capital A, but lowercase a. So thinking about, you know, there's always the typical sense around arts, you know, like performing arts and visual arts, but there's also the restaurant owner who has a culinary art, a really unique thing about them that makes them, that's part of the identity of a neighborhood, or it's someone who does something at home, does photography or makes soaps. We have people that work with soap. So broadening the definition, and then, because I also think that when you think about arts, it's sometimes intimidating for people to think about if they don't see themselves as artists. And then the last point I'll say is bringing on, it's been great working with artists, not just because of the art they produce, but also a kind of a creative perspective on things that I don't have, an entirely new perspective on things.
So I want to pull out one piece of this too, the idea of partnerships, you know, and the idea that I know that we don't think that all arts and all artists should do placemaking, and that it should come naturally, you know, right. And I think this is why we include partnerships in the definition and when we talk about creative placemaking, because, you know, certainly there are people that have dual competencies. I mean, Waterfire has a really great dual competency, I think, in the place piece and in the arts piece. But to the extent that we want to help foster partnerships between arts and non-arts and arts and place people, really, so that the arts can do what you do best and what to really bring out that sort of, again, that sort of value proposition of everything without having to divert necessarily to sort of get engaged in all these placement issues. And if you can do both, that's great too. But, you know, if you're feeling like I'm still not sure how to make what I do into placemaking, I think one of the first things you can do is go talk to somebody in the community who's doing placemaking work to think about, well, how can we align our agendas, or how can we align our activity over here and what you're trying to do over here to basically enhance and build on momentum that's already happening. So I think there's sometimes, you know, when we're sitting there and we're thinking especially about grant applications and we're like, how do I shoehorn this in? And like, it's not necessarily about shoehorning it in. It's about working in tandem with and in collaboration with and in alignment with other things that are happening to help contribute to that larger outcome, which I think is an important point.
Thanks. So my question to the panelists is, how are you implementing and or funding maintenance and clean and safe and staffing for the implementation of these programming?
Speak up. Sorry, I can't really hear.
Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. How are you implementing and funding maintenance for the clean and safe and or the staffing and or the long-term protection of these great public interventions, i.e. through business improvement districts or volunteers or public safety, police departments? I mean, how are you...
How are they maintained, the temporariness?
It is a challenge, and I think that's one of the reasons why we've tended to go towards temporary structures, because the level of the cost that it would take to create permanent city furniture, you know, say as an example, you know, and as well as the relations it would take and the sort of permits you'd need to have are a different scale than working with a community to say, you know what, we need a bench at this bus stop, and we're just going to build a bench at this bus stop, and we're going to have it there until it gets taken away. So a little bit more guerrilla style, a little bit more like, how could you create change here if you wanted to? A little bit like Kimberly was showing of, it's prefab, but you're out here painting it with us, and you're a part of it, and it might not be here next time. And if it's not here, then maybe you're thinking, I should make something to be here.
And one thing I'll add too, on the Street Lab Uphams, we actually had a business that a hair salon next to the alley that had basically adopted one of the benches that we had created. She brings it in and out every night. So it gets back to, I mean, I think it's community ownership of what you're actually doing. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, that's messy, and I'm not going to lie that it's like perfect every time. But when it works, when you have a really strong process and really being really upfront with how that can work and work well, then that's where you can get the ownership, and it's less reliant on us or anyone else, but the people who are directly benefiting from it.
Yeah, so
Hey, thanks. I was just thinking about, you know, if you're receiving a one-time large infusion of cash through a project support grant, what are some strategies for sustainability? So in thinking about future years that you'll want to continue the projects, what are some strategies at the local level or from Art Place in trying to keep these projects going?
I'll respond to that. With what we've done in D.C., we had local match for the Art Place grant. That wasn't a requirement, but we thought that that was really critical for the sustainability factor for the projects and the momentum. So we had in-kind support from the Arts and Humanities Commission that we leveraged a concurrent project of theirs, and then OP kicked in dollars. And in terms of sustainability, I think that the planning framework that we were operating in and all of the communities actually helped push that forward as well, because with the Central 14th Street plan, the plan went to council, it was adopted. Some of the public realm improvements are actually now part of the capital improvement plan, like in the Department of Transportation. So there was actually some real momentum that was achieved through the small temporary intervention that actually led to real dollars being put into the respective agency budgets to help some of the plan come in online a little bit sooner than it probably would have. And the other neighborhoods, what happened was there was capacity building with each of the neighborhood organizations that we worked with. There was some capacity. All of the organizations basically hadn't done a project of that scale and magnitude before, so it raised the level in which they were operating, and some of them attracted additional support after Art Place was done. The Central 14th Street community, they had an advisory committee as part of the plan. The nonprofit that was just getting off the ground actually received some technical assistance through another program around vibrant retail streets. So this Art Place grant is kind of the gift that keeps on giving, even though the projects were temporary in each of the neighborhoods. And with Brooklyn, which I didn't even talk about, it was a dance organization. Well, it actually fundamentally changed how they thought about programming. Instead of just coming to their space, they actually do much more programming out in the neighborhood and in the public realm as a result of the Art Place grant. And it actually it generated more funders and supporters to the organization because they were visible not just to the dance community, but to the actual neighborhood that they were operating in.
And for us, briefly, I'd say we split the grant among 9 partners, which was really complicated, and sometimes we wanted to kill each other or ourselves. But when we went back to the table just recently, because we're talking about are we going to reapply, it was really interesting because every partner was like, well, you know, I'm here at the Berklee School of Music, and they're thinking about leveraging this and bringing this, and I'm here at Jose Mateo Dance Theater, and we're in connection with this grant, this funder. So people are really trying to say, whether or not we get the grant, if we're in this together in Upham's Corner, what else do we bring to the table? And that's been helpful.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that we're hoping to help build sort of local movements, you know, I think the more that to thinking about the funding is coming from many different sectors because there's a multi-sector impact that's happening. I think it's one way to look at it. Of course, we'd love to, you know, give 10-year grants and have massive, large projects, you know, and there's, you know, a lot more that, you know, our structure, you know, I think it would be, you know, be nice to have that flexibility. But I think to the idea of using these grants as a catalyst to do that kind of capacity building while you're simultaneously executing the project, and thinking about the sustainability of funding from the very beginning is actually really critical, and it's something that we actually look at when we review full applications and how much that's sort of considered, and certainly going outside of, you know, the traditional arts sector, because like we're not here to take money from the arts sector and put it over here. We're here to help create a bigger pie overall. That's just sort of a big statement, and I think you know, sort of an important way to look at it. So again, I think I just want to just reiterate that this is not the only kind of creative placemaking that we do and that we fund, and that's important. This is just sort of, again, one slice to complement the other kinds of you know, sort of performing arts or
or the other kinds of community animation and community engagement projects that we fund. And I urge you, if you haven't and you're interested in Art Place, to go on our website. There's a new page, artplaceamerica.com/resources, that sort of brings together some of the main things, principles of creative placemaking, more about the vibrancy indicators if you're interested. There's a PDF that lists all of the grants that we've made with short little blurbs on them. And sometimes just doing that helps think about how we think, you know, what we've supported and how people have framed that. So that's one final thing. So with that, I will end. I want to thank everybody for your vast attention. It was wonderful. And we'll be around.